You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
It's Pro Wrestling Cast.
Shut up! My time has come, and that's the bottom line.
With your hosts, Aljon and Steven.
I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company.
It's Pro Wrestling Cast, your weekly look into the world of professional wrestling.
I'm going to reach out right now. I want you at home to know my hand is touching your hand.
Follow us on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Cast and on Twitter at P Wrestling Cast.
I always try to do what's best for business.
Have a question or just want to comment? Leave us a voicemail at 615-9339-PWC. That's 615-9339-792.
Or how about a Y2J telling you to shut the hell up?
And now, Pro Wrestling Cast.
Once again, emanating from parts unknown, it is the Pro Wrestling Cast, your weekly show of wrestling news and commentary. I am your face, the white meat baby face from the Isle of Samoa. No, I'm just joking. You know, it's Haku now. It's Aljon. Aljon, yo, lifelong wrestling fan. Thank you so much for joining us each and every single week. I've got my Boba Fett shirt, thanks to our link at Amazon.com.
There you go.
And we're also here joined by our heel commentary. He is the heel. Please welcome Steven Anthony.
The caffeine dub. Yeah, cheers.
Boo. Yes, boo.
Cheers from around, cheers and boos from Louisiana all the way to Nashville.
Cheers and jeers, indeed. You know what? It's really great when you can interact with us. We'd love for you to follow us on social media, P Wrestling Cast on Twitter, Pro Wrestling Cast on Facebook. You can also like and subscribe to our YouTube page. We do like those. Every little bit helps. Like it. Pro Wrestling Cast on YouTube. You can actually find all of those links on our website, prowrestlingcast.com. Before we get into the meat and potatoes of our show, because we have a ton of stuff to talk about, let's first talk about our good friends over there on prowrestlingcast.com. We're talking about Amazon. This is a great way for you to support our show. If you dig the Mark Talk that you hear every single week, just click the link for Amazon and support our show. There are products and things that you buy every day, whether you're pre-ordering movies, whether it's video games like WWE 15 or any other type of service, product, whatever, on Amazon, please do it, because every little bit helps out our show. It doesn't cost you any more. You just simply help out our show. The other thing you can do is check out our link to Fandango. Yeah, you can buy your movie tickets through there too. Now that he's a face, I can happily do that. So you can buy your tickets through Fandango. Age of Ultron, the Marvel movie, is amazing. The Avengers Age of Ultron, pick it up. Pick up those tickets. And right now, if you pick it up, I believe we're giving away free comics, digital comics. I believe six of them or something like that. Ridiculous. I did that, and I got my free comics, and you should too. Digital comics through our Fandango link. Just click the link for Avengers Age of Ultron and get your tickets for that film. Last but not least, our friend Derek over there at High Spots, he's going to be coming on our show real soon, and we love High Spots. That's a great thing. You're a wrestling fan, you're a mark, you love shoot videos, which I know you do. I know Stephen and I do. We watch a whole lot of them, and yep, we can't get enough of them. I can't wait. I'm still trying to figure out what I want from the gimmick table. I might just get a WrestleCon shirt because I love WrestleCon. I think that's really cool. One of these days I'll go to WrestleCon. But yeah, right. So thank you to Derek. High Spots, click the link. They have a sale going on right now. Thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of on-demand content for you to check out. You've got the WWE Network, and that's awesome. But if you want the inside scoop, you need to go ahead and check out High Spots and click the link for their digital content, because you can get those shoot videos and hours of content that you love from the superstars that you grew up with. They'll give you the lowdown and the dirty on everything and all things wrestling. Ric Flair, as you mentioned, we're going to talk about him later on the show, has a tremendous shoot video that you bought, Steven, which is insane. It's like a 3-disc collection on DVD, and so many more. Plus, you can also get videos from WrestleCon and $5 wrestling pay-per-view events, iPay-per-view events, all kinds of stuff there at highspots.com. Just click our link at prowrestlingtest.com. And now, the moment of truth, which you've been waiting for. The glove of injustice has been pulled. Our heel commentary man on the microphone, Mr. Stephen Anthony, has got this week.
This week in wrestling news.
In news, Stephen, the WWE investors call took place.
Yeah, they finally had their quarterly investors call. I found a lot of things very interesting. One of the more interesting things is the actual paid attendance for WrestleMania. Do you remember the announced attendance when we were watching at your home?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I believe it was somewhere around 79. Right?
Or 60, I think they said 69, right?
Was 68? 68? It was somewhere around 70.
Well, you can subtract 10,000 from that. It was 58,900 paid.
Whoa.
So that 57,800, and that's just to give you an idea how much they embellish their number. You know, they have always done that. They don't do it for smaller shows that are 13 or 15, but well, sometimes they do. But
realize this, that you know they never say paid attendees. They always say attendance records, which means support staff, WWE employees,
right?
On the people mowing the lawn in the back, you know. So. Yeah. It's they like did
3 million in merch, which is a record.
Now that is nice.
About $50 a person on merch, which is an extraordinarily high amount. They gauge their revenue, you know, they gauge a lot of old school ways, and one of the old school ways is house show attendance, which they're up in, and the other way is merch, which they're doing fine in. I found this the most interesting. Obviously the network needs approximately, it doesn't even need a million. It needs 1.2 million for them to turn a profit. It's at 1.3 technically. Now, they didn't announce a network number. The last time they announced a number was the day after WrestleMania. So the stock didn't really, it went down and then back up. I think the stockholders are concerned that so many people unsubscribe and then resubscribe. On a personal note, I'm a subscriber to the network, correct?
So am I. Yep.
I went in, I hope they don't hear this, but I went in with a different email just to test it. And I said, oh, I'd like the free month. And they gave it right to me. I didn't pay, which is terrible. But, you know, I still had to give them a credit card number. But, you know, they did that. Now, here's the most telling thing. How did they turn a profit after they've lost money the last few months or more than that? Television rights did 26 million for 2015. That's what they've done between 11 and 13 million the past 5 years. TV rights, 26 million, more than double of the normal amount. They have 3-hour show, right? Mm-hmm. The TV rights and the new deal all are kind of intertwined in that. So this is what I realized. 26 million from TV rights, they turn a profit. 3-hour show, there's no way they're going to 2, ever. They'll never go back to 2 hours. And that, Al John, is why we have so many mid-carders. They know this. They have to fill 3 hours forever. Obviously, you have your big, big-time main eventers like Undertaker, Brock Lesnar, Triple H. You know, Stephanie McMahon would even go in with that, and John Cena. And then you have your second-tier main eventers like Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns. And then you have literally 50 mid-carders that are over. And I think that's the reason we see so many TV jobs, so many people not pushed to the top level, so many people given strange pushes that are short, like R-Truth and Fandango. And it all makes sense to me now. They still keep with their basic, we need 5. They really like to have 8 big names. Just look at the WrestleMania poster. It'll tell you everything you need to know.
That's right.
Triple H, Undertaker, Sting. Those guys don't wrestle often, and they were on it. And it's the mid-card world now, and we will be in this world for several years because that's how they are turning a TV. That was the idea, I believe, to turn a profit against the $120 million they had to invest in the network and all these things that we talk about.
That's right. So, well, think about all the shows that are currently on or off the network that they repackage for international distribution. You know, that's why you have right. Main Event. That's why, you know, and it's not currently, you know, being on ION. So therefore, it's on the network. Case or Superstars is on, you know, those shows are always repackaged for the overseas market. And, you know, the 26 million, is that revenue in the United States alone or is that revenue worldwide?
Oh, that's worldwide. Because, I mean, they're very much a worldwide company.
Yeah, of course. I didn't know if they'd specified exactly what the distribution and the television earnings were. But I mean, look at all the huge markets. I mean, the UK, India, you know, Malaysia. I mean, all of those places are, you know, huge WWE fans. They can't get enough of it. And they want that television. It's a producing. The WWE, more than anything else, is not just a wrestling company. It is an entertainment company. It is its own television network. It is, you know, a producer of content for the world. So it totally makes sense. I understand the sea of mid-carders. Someone has got to headline those mid-card shows on TV to produce ratings.
Right.
So who's it going to be? R-Truth, Dolph Ziggler, Wade Barrett, you know. So those are the guys, you know, Daniel Bryan, you know. So
who's that?
I don't know.
Is he on the show?
Yeah, well, maybe. I think he should just wrestle once a year like Undertaker at this point.
He does.
He does wrestle once a year.
Hey, Smart Marks, good idea to boo Roman Reigns out the building and try to put over Daniel Bryan as the champion again, because what would have happened is he would have gotten injured after a week again. Just to answer your question, I have it right here, and this is courtesy of David Meltzer, the acclaimed wrestling historian, the real wrestling historian from WrestlingObserver.com. But they do approximately 80% from North America, between 10 and 12%. This is the last 5 years, between 10 and 12% in Europe, Africa, and Asia. They do about 7%. And then Latin America is actually only 1%, which I found interesting. Other things that excel, the Xbox game did 30% up, and Total Divas is the top rated show on E, apparently.
That's right. I told you. It's a must.
Okay, I made a mistake. It's making money now.
Well, I think the revenue generated by that and the fans that are generated by that is appealing to the popularity of the female demographic, you know. Yeah. And that's great. They have to have content for the network. They have to have content for overseas markets. And it is, you know, reality TV, like wrestling, is an inexpensive prospect to produce. It's not like producing, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. every week, you know.
Is that? I don't even know what Age of Ultron is. Somebody told me about it, and I thought they said Age of Voltron, and I thought for weeks it was a Voltron movie.
Age of Voltron.
I'm not making a joke.
I know you're not. You're not into the whole comic book thing like I am. So
I'm not into anything anymore.
Other than wrestling.
Wrestling, and I watch football for about 5 months a year, and that's it.
Well, and see, that's why you're here on the show.
That's right. I learned a lot.
Yeah. No. It's all good. Well, any other news coming out of the investors' call in terms of new programming for the network or anything like that?
The network, they put all that money into it. And, you know, we could get into that now, because there were a slew of new programs on the network, which I'm getting for free. that I already paid for. But I mean, they have a lot of really cool new shows that we could talk about. Have you seen a few of them?
I have. You know, they do this after a really big pitch for the free month in order to make sure that the subscribers stay on. Look, we have a bunch of new programming. So they'll do that. And then the programming will get kind of stale after a while and whatnot. But I really like it. So let's first run down the program that I think will get a lot of mileage. Let's start first with the next episode of Live with Chris Jericho. Shall we do that first?
Sure. What's the next one? You mean the one coming up or the one that just happened?
Oh, no. The one that just happened. This is the second of the Y2J interviews.
The Stephanie McMahon interview.
Yes. The Stephanie McMahon interview was the second. The first one he did, and I'm sure you've seen it by now.
Cena.
Yeah, with John Cena. Once again, I thought that just really quickly, Stephanie McMahon comes in all prim, proper. And I thought that although there were times that I thought Stephanie let her guard down and gave that Stephanie McMahon laugh that you never hear. You never hear Stephanie laugh or smile the way she does.
Sure.
Other than maybe in her Instagram or her Facebook account, which is great because I think she's really charming, you know.
Yeah.
I'd love to have dinner with Stephanie and Triple H, to be honest, because I think they're fascinating people. And
I'd love to have dinner with just her.
Oh, yeah. Where's your wife? Well, she is what's breast for business. So
she looked lovely, by the way. We talk about looks, and I always don't talk about looks of the divas. I'm all proper. Stephanie looked really nice.
Yeah. She looked good. So good. And you can tell from her body language she was into talking to Chris Jericho. Mm-hmm. I think there is a relationship there. There's a chemistry there between the two. And I was like, wow, you know what? I always thought that there was this chemistry when the two of them were you know, getting together against Triple H, which was a great storyline back in the Attitude Era.
Yeah,
absolutely loved it. And the rivalry between Stephanie and Chris was great. And in fact, Chris Jericho even mentioned that it was because of her that he was able to kind of get over in main event status, which is great because, yeah, it was because of that program with Triple H and her that really put him over, I believe. But and I was always a believer anyway. But to see the two of them interact was great. I didn't feel that it was a hard-hitting interview, and I know that people always are like, damn, Jericho, why do you throw softballs all the time? And to be honest, like, if you hear Chris Jericho in his podcast, he's not one to stir up controversy.
No, he's not.
He really isn't, and he's not. And he wants to have a conversation. He wants to have a conversational interview with these people. I think it was really, really good. I think it was good. I think it was entertaining. It was a glimpse, but I didn't think that I did think that she was very well rehearsed in her replies and her answers. Steven, I've been talking a lot. Let's go ahead and get your take on it, and we can break down some of the finer points.
Stephanie's interview was fine, but I think the last thing I said about the podcast was we'll really see the direction they're going now when Stephanie's interviewed by Chris. And sure enough, it is a very light version. I do think now, looking at it, that Steve Austin was asking hard-hitting questions that probably made the older gentleman that runs the company officially very angry. And I think they wanted somebody in there that knew the game, not so much to direct him succinctly on every question, but just to simply talk about the things that they want to talk about and know when to censor himself and what things not to bring up. Obviously, China being brought up by Triple H. You know, what it really did is it started a cacophony of China YouTube videos. And I'm not saying like, oh, China shouldn't be promoted or China shouldn't be on YouTube. I'm saying that China goes on YouTube and sometimes, not all the time, it's very strange. I saw a very odd video that made me very worried about her health and gave me the impression that perhaps she was still struggling, allegedly, or whatever, with things. And I don't know about that, but it was a very odd video. There was some.
It is odd, isn't it?
It was very odd.
Because she'll go on blast, you know.
Right.
To talk about Stephanie and Triple H and talk about the Stone Cold podcast. And then she'll go on and talk to Vince Russo, very level-headed, very normal. But then she'll have these little things where it's like, what did you do? Did you go on a bender and decide to turn on the webcam?
Yes.
What's going on? So, I mean, we care for you, China. Please don't screw yourself up.
Care for China. She was very over. She got more over than any girl ever. She had something very awful happen to her in her life where she lost her man to someone who was her boss. And I couldn't imagine what that would be like. And I don't want to say that sent her in a tailspin, but you know, when you start hanging out with Sean Waltman and doing
stuff you shouldn't do,
things you shouldn't do with filming, perhaps. And later, I mean, I'm sure she made a lot of money with those movies she made, but it just seemed to, you know, I understand. I don't want to go off into the China tangent. We've done that before, but I guess we already did, but
know, too late.
You know, that would be the reason to bring it back, why Vince McMahon probably didn't like Stone Cold's podcast. Stone Cold should have thought, because I think about the things I say too, and I tried to, and I say a lot of controversial things, but you know, he has to think, hey, I know that girl, I know Joni, she's probably going to get wild out on this, and she doesn't probably want to be reminded about that. She probably doesn't want to be brought up, or maybe she does. Chris Jericho understood all these things. That being said, I was really looking forward to that interview, and when I watched it, I was let down. Just to be honest, I thought it would have been a little bit different. It was a very nice, quaint conversation. It did not run 1 second over an hour. You know, we talk a lot, and we always go, we'll just do an hour, but we do an hour and a half, you know, because we get lively and start talking and going tangents, and I won't say it was scripted, but it was very safe, and she looks really nice. I'll say that one more time. You know, she is charming. She is a charming person. You know,
you have to be. I mean, let's look at the business they're in. You know, they're in sales and marketing, and she is an on-camera talent. She learned a lot from her father. One of the questions that I thought was most intriguing was, once again, Shane got brought up
in
the conversation. There was an article, I think Meltzer posted it or Powell posted it, regarding an ex-staff writer from the magazine saying that Shane is the nicest person in the McMahon family. That was the reason that he is not quote-unquote suited for that business, which is one one reason why Stephanie was picked, because she is more like Vince, quote unquote, the Vincess. And I believe that they had even said that in the show, if I'm not mistaken.
They did.
So, you know, she was born for that, and Shane was not. And, you know, it's a shame that Shane is not with the company, because I believe that, you know, I think he has so much to add to that company. And I would say that if you have Stephanie, who's the brand ambassador, you have Triple H, who is the head of TV, you know, why don't you make Shane the head of talent relations?
Because that's the job where everyone hates you. Everyone hated Jim Ross when he did it. Everyone hated John Laurinaitis when he did it. And everyone hates Triple H now. It's just the job. It's not the person, you know. And I don't think Shane's fit to do that, because you have to go, hey, Buff Bagwell, hey, Buff, we're letting you out of your contract, and good luck to you. Hey, man, you didn't give me a shot. Hey, I'm sorry. You're going to hate the guy that did that to you.
Yeah.
But it's not Jim Ross that did it. It's Vince McMahon, and everybody's like, get rid of him, you know, and that's a tough job, and I don't think Shane could have done that. Shane was a fantastic worker in the very sense of working and becoming a character. You know, he had glass matches with Kurt. I mean, I remember, I couldn't believe he was doing glass spots.
I couldn't believe he could do the Van Damminator, to be quite honest.
He just did shocking thing after shocking thing. It probably wasn't a good idea for business. It made Van Damme look like, you know, anybody could do it, because Shane is a very normal looking guy, but he's actually a tough as nails bastard.
Yeah,
is what he is. He had clearly a concussion on that concrete bump in that Kurt Angle match, continued for 10-20 minutes with glass shards in him.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, that is a great match. You're right. Probably not talent relations. Maybe, you know, I think he may have been right for merchandise. You're right. You know, his old role before Joey Styles, you know, did his job. But you're right. I mean, it did leave me, the interview did leave me with a sense of wanting more. And I feel that, you know, there were some good questions about Stephanie McMahon, the person, versus Stephanie McMahon, the character. And it was interesting to see her laugh. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway, is the fact that she smiled and she laughed, and, you know, and that people could see a glimpse as to what she's really like outside of her character that she portrays, which a lot of people can't wrap their mind around. They can't wrap their mind around the fact that the character that she portrays and the person underneath all that is, you know, they may have the same name, you right. know, but it's totally two different people. So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, just like what we do. I mean, clearly, you know, we're marks on here, but, you know, this is only a segment of who we really are. You know, we are entertainers. We're trying to entertain you out there. So we're going to say and do things that might be quite interesting, or maybe even on contrary of what our personal belief systems are. because we want to entertain people. Yeah, or you know, Steven is a really, though, a heel. So
he really is.
So what else did you take away from that particular program?
That was about it. I was just a little let down. I felt better about some of the other things I watched. Mick Foley's show was actually a little better than I thought it would be.
It is exactly what I thought it would be.
I mean, look, pick up his book, his first book. That first book made me understand everything a little bit. And then I became the wrestling historian. I wanted to know everything about wrestling history. So I watched your friend Ryan, who we had on the show, who was a wonderful guest, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. He did do the podcast without a shirt on, I noticed. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, he was trying to be a wrestling heel, too.
I certainly could not pull that off at this point in my life. But, God, I got sidetracked.
So, we're talking about Mick Foley's Have a Nice Night.
That book made me watch everything I could from old wrestling shoots to old footage. You know,
was that the impetus for you to really spur into this whole situation, was his book?
Yeah, that book directly deals with me paying money to read about the investors meeting to a very statistical page after page reading it. I wanted to know everything about wrestling. I fell in love with it because he made the business seem so fun in the way that he made it up. And he should have been just a job guy for WCW. And he made it all the way to being in the main event of WrestleMania, to winning the title on one of the highest rated wrestling TV episodes ever in late 1998.
Yeah, he was the linchpin of the Monday Night Wars, and he is become one of the most beloved professional wrestler characters of all of professional wrestling history.
And what he did was he took all of the stories in his book, and what I think is what he's going to do if he does more, I guess he will, is he just tells stories in his own way. He's very charming. He's not really like hilarious funny, but he just basically tells stories from the book. He tells them very well and adds in a few things here and there. But yeah, it was exactly what I thought it would be. It was produced the same way you would the Chappelle show, where you have, you know, my wife's an actress, and clearly she points out things to me. These are clearly all plants. These aren't, you know, that's not a real audience, you know, but just like the Chappelle show isn't a real audience.
Oh, yeah, they cast the audience. It's a Full Sail University. That's where they tape NXT.
Yeah.
So they have, you know, the production value looked great because, once again, I mean, the setting looked great. If you didn't know it was live outside of Full Sail, they had a pre-show that had a lot of, you know, canned packages that they've made about Mick over the years, about how he was the commissioner being the best time of his life, to his hellacious bumps, to the fact that, you know, he's an award-winning New York Times bestselling author.
Chappelle.
You know? So, yeah, which was great because, you know, you had your friend Brian Sexcastle and Renee Young hosting that pre-show. But awesome stuff, too. And I have it on good authority that Jim Ross opened up for the show, and they also taped his show as well.
Yeah, he does a similar type of show, and if you're a fan of the Ross Report, Jim Ross has a very specific way of talking to his fans that's a little bit different than the guy you hear talking on TV. Southern boy, but he's like a slow Southerner. Hey, I'm just giving my opinion. Hey, that's just how I feel, okay? And he's also charming, so I hope we see that too, Al John. I haven't heard about that. I hate that bastard so much for some reason, but...
You don't like Jim Ross?
No, Vince McMahon seems to bully him.
Yeah, well, you know what? I mean, they must have come to terms. I mean, they obviously sell a butt ton of his JR's barbecue sauce in WWE shop. And they obviously think of him enough to have him open up for Mick Foley, whether it was them reaching out to him or whether it was Mick Foley saying, we need an opening act or an act like Jim Ross. I think there was a good opportunity for them to have both of them come in and do their shtick in front of a live audience to provide programming for the network, which for me, I will see this. I'll give Mick Foley a second viewing. I may not give Stephanie McMahon's interview a second viewing, you know, and maybe it'll be on in the background as I do something else. But, you know, the Stone Cold show that with Vince McMahon, I had to play that like two or three times to take it all in.
Right.
You know, I could, and then I listened to the podcast so I could really listen. And it's the experience of listening to the show versus actually watching the show is different. There are certain things you can pick up on, and there are some certain times within, and just to sort of backtrack on Stephanie, there are certain times you could hear her throat closing up.
Yeah.
And she needed some water. She needed something when she, you know, she was asking the questions, and it's like, okay, well, we know how you really feel about X, Y, and Z. You know, it's a different situation. But with Mick Foley's show, I thought it was great. I think you're right. He had a really fun way of doing that. And bringing up his autistic child, by the way, his kid played drums. I mean, that's awesome that he brought him up there and did that. And I hope that they do bring him back for more programming. Let's move on to this program, Jerry Springer and the Too Hot for Network TV show that they had.
Yeah, clip filled, just like I thought it would be. Maybe I'm getting old, but I don't like to watch that stuff anymore.
Clip shows are boring anyway.
No, I mean, I don't want to watch the Mark. Like, when I saw Mark Henry come on, I didn't watch. I don't want to see that anymore. I'm done. But those gross Mark Henry, all that gross shit, I don't want to see that.
It was pretty gross stuff, you know? Yeah, needless to say, that's basically what it's going to be. It's going to be a clip show reminding everybody of the Attitude Era and the fact that they could get away with certain things on the WWE Network that they can't on the USA Network.
So. Right. Well, they had a couple of fun things I saw in there, and it was fun to relive some Kane moments and this and that. But, when I see Mark Henry, I'm going to turn off your... If I see Mark Henry having... Like, what was the point of that? Mark Henry having sex with a transvestite, Mark Henry having sex with an old woman, and Mark Henry's old girlfriend giving birth to a hand. And
well, I mean, it was the whole point of, you know, we can't beat the world's strongest man. The way we're going to do it is since he's a self-proclaimed sex addict, is we're going to work and pray off that so we can get over him, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, he had signed a 10-year, I remember this, I think it was 10 years for $10 million. They tried to sign Kurt Angle in 1996. And luckily, he came in 98, 99. You know, I think that was good timing. Mm-hmm. But they gave that contract to Mark Henry. So they had him wrapped up till 2006. So 2 years into it, they were like, what the hell are we going to do with this guy? Mm-hmm. And that's when they started saying, okay, you're going to have to do this strange crap. And that's a, it was a very Russo kind of, there was a lot of Russo on that clip. And it was actually the brighter side of Russo is getting over mid-carders in very special ways, you know, maybe Sean Morley as Val Venus, or, you know, making Mark Henry a lover of all and all these sorts of things, or, you know, crucifixion scenes to get, you know, Bradshaw and Farouk got over, but their initial way to get over was to be with The Undertaker as sort of a, you know, they had pentagrams on them, you know? Yeah. Did they wanted Dan Severn to do that?
Well, that would have kind of made sense. Let's have those wooden performer guys come out right. that didn't have any really good mic skills and come out. Lo and behold, that's where the Bradshaw character really blossomed after that, after the APA. But
yeah, Dan Severn didn't get over, and I was a big mark when he came out because I knew
so that
I did watch UFC, which is a mid-90s. He didn't get over. He was wooden. So he says in a shoot I watched, they came to him and they said, we want you to do an angle now where you have a pentagram on your head. And he says, I live in a small town in Michigan. I'm not doing anything like that. And the writer or agent supposedly tells him, well, if you do that, we're gonna, you know, you're gonna start losing a lot of matches straight, you know, so you should really do this, trying to convince him to do it. And Severn supposedly told him, put me in there with somebody. He's like, why don't you put me in there with Steve Austin? And maybe I'll make your show a little bit different than you wrote it, you know, and he kind of implying like, look, I can choke out any of your boys here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they were trying to, at that time, get anyone wooden over. And, you know, that's just an example. Owen Hart did the same thing. He didn't want to be involved with it. They wanted to do an angle with Ken Shamrock where he was having sex with his sister, which is disgusting.
Yeah. And by the way, Ken Shamrock's sister, hot. It was the person that played her.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the best-looking gals they ever got in the show. I don't really ever know what happened with her.
No, she disappeared like Fandango's first valet. Yeah.
Well, that valet was a real dancer.
Yeah.
And I think she was probably more expensive than the usual girl they get.
You know? I would say, but, man, she was gorgeous.
She was gorgeous, and they got rid of her, and then they got a girl that couldn't dance, and it kind of made it more obvious that Fandango couldn't dance, because Fandango can't dance very good.
Oh, no.
I don't know if anyone's realized that yet.
Of course not.
Hate to break kayfabe, but
yes. Leave that one for the kayfabe commentaries. So
Springer was fine. I mean, if you like that stuff, it was good. It was done in a good format. Springer's a good host. Springer likes wrestling. And
Springer's great. He's always a great personality to have. Let me see other WWE programming that of note. I mean, those were really the top things. I mean, they did have Corey Graves. Like I said, the Future Shock Show was great. The Renee Young special. Where she interviewed, I tell you, that was. Did you see that at all? Did you see the Rollins interview with Renee Young at a pancake shop?
No, I saw the Rollins special though that showed very quickly after Raw on Monday. They kind of threw it.
Okay.
And I didn't see the Renee Young thing.
The Renee Young thing was great because once again, it is just a, you know, really quick piece of work. I don't even know if it was even 30 minutes long, but that show, just like Corey Graves' show, great content. A lot of just, you know, talking over maple syrup pancakes. It was just really, really good. And Renee Young is so likable. And you actually, at the end of this interview, you look at Seth Rollins and you go, man, I like this guy a lot. Like, I really like this guy. And I liked him anyway before he was in WWE. But then to see his personality come out and talk about this stuff off the cuff was just, it was really, really good. So kudos to WWE and kudos to Renee Young, because she is just, whatever it is, the X factor of interviewers.
You got it.
She has it in spades. Personality. She looks great. Dean Ambrose, you're a lucky man. That's all I'll say about that. But holy smokes, man, she's going to take wrestling commentating to a whole new level when she has the opportunity to do so, because the commentary right now, if it wasn't for Michael Cole, sucks. Commentary sucks right now. Bradshaw's great. Booker T sucks. And I love Booker T, five-time champion. I am a huge mark for you. Don't get me wrong, but I hate you on commentary.
you made a taboo this week that actually infuriated me, because I'm a big Freebirds fan.
Mm-hmm.
He said, New Day was fighting 3-on-2 in a handicap match. We'll review that later. And he said, it's it's Freebirds. They do Freebirds rules. No, the Freebirds rules were any two of the three Freebirds could defend the title, not all three at the same time. It's just little things like that. It's like, no, that's not the what the Freebirds do. If you keep throwing out this Freebirds crap with New Day, which I think is supposed to be funny, at least know what you're talking about. Because if you're a big Freebirds mark like me, you're going to get pissed off.
Well, if you're in a, this is not the first time. They didn't do Freebirds rules with the Shield. They didn't do Freebirds rules with the Shield. It was always the two.
Right.
It was never the one, or it was never the three. But to make that proclamation to people would be very helpful, so people can follow the product. Could not be, you know, because I look at it and I'm like, who are the tag team champions? It's supposed to be a two people thing. Does that mean that if something happens to Tyson Kidd, that Natalya will all of a sudden be able to wield the belt and she'll be able to defend, you know, with them because of the Freebird rule? Because they're all part of the same stable.
Technically, Xavier Woods would not be a champion because he wasn't involved in the actual match that held the pinfall. I'm being logical here, but
he can defend it. Now, if one of the combatants is injured and they, because of being part of the same team or stable, are able to say, okay, this is my new partner, they can do that, I believe, under whatever rule book there is. But I think there just needs to be a whole revisitation of the rules and maybe come up with a special on the WWE Network about the rules to talk about referees. I don't know. I'd watch it just because let's stick to some damn rules. It is supposed to be a contest. They say this contest is scheduled for one fall.
The logic of the show is what makes it work. I don't think people get that either. You know, the rules of the show make it so that a heel can break a rule and be a heel. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't use the RKO, so the heel has gotten over on the guy. That's why that match stipulation was stupid. They both used it, and the finish was based around the RKO anyway. The idea was the heel makes a rule, and you can't follow the rule, and that's why he's a heel, or in that particular match. Or you can't have your guy, your bodyguard, hit Diesel, can't hit Shawn Michaels' opponent. When the ref sees, Diesel acts like nothing happened because they're following the rules. Shawn Michaels and his crew were very good at that whole idea. Follow the rules so you can then break them and be the heel.
That's right. Why do you have heels like Lord Steven Regal go to the ring with brass knuckles in his trunks?
The reason you have Steve Regal hit people with brass knucks is so I can mark out. That's
right. That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And same goes for anybody that's ever done that before. Piper, Flair. I mean, you know, anybody that goes down there, you know, or, you know, how come Iron Mike Sharp all of a sudden has to wear the cast, you know, or for Bob Orton, for that matter, they wear a cast because it's a heel move. You're not supposed to be able to load up your arm and hit people over the head with your cast when your arm is completely fine. I mean, or D'Lo Brown wearing the chest protector, for heaven's sake. You know, body armor, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to get chopped. So anyway, we're going down a rabbit hole here. Suffice it to say, the WWE Network is putting out some decent programming. It's always good to see them put out these shows. I would like for them to continue with these type of, their way of doing a shoot interview is not doing a shoot. You know, they leave that to the YouTube guys, to RF Video, to High Spots, to Kayfabe Commentaries, all those great guys that do that. But a real sit-down interview that is more entertainment than anything. And if you get extra nuggets of shoot out of that, awesome. So be it. Anything else to wrap up this little segment before we move on to some other wrestling news and commentary?
Well, we should move into King of the Ring because that was on the network, but that's another subject.
Yeah. We can move on to King of the Ring if you'd like.
Well, King of the Ring is a really cool network idea. You know, King of the Ring was a pay-per-view. We both loved it for years. They took it away. And what they did, you know, when I went on my network and I see my little boxes of things to watch, it said King of the Ring. And I'm like, oh, King of the Ring. Let me watch that like I used to. Now, it was only about, I think it was 50 minutes long. But it was cool that, you know, they added something like that on there to get me reinterested. As far as the King of the Ring's content, the matches were rather short. Neville... When I said that Daniel Bryan was hurt and that they would give an equal or lesser value babyface a win, that ended up being Neville. Well, Neville will now pay for that because now Neville has to job to Wade Barrett all the time, apparently. And that's what we saw in the main event. He did get a screw job victory over Sheamus, Sheamus did get busted open with real blood. And like you were saying, Al John, that's the only way we're going to get blood is if it's a hard way situation. The blood was effective. The match was very short. I think it was 5 or 6 minutes. You know, I guess I was anticipating, you know, I remember King of the Ring 96 is actually my favorite, a forgotten treasure. but it starts off with a Mark Miro. That's right, Mark Miro versus Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. And they have a spectacular 15 minutes little opening match. That has peaks and valleys and ends with Steve Austin winning with the stunner, which he just started using actually at the time. That's what I'm used to with the King of the Ring. I'm not used to a 5 minute match with R-Truth, you know.
Or no, King of the Ring seemed like a legit thing because, you know, especially in the early days of the UFC when they would have their tournaments, it was tournament style. And that's the whole European aspect, which I really dug, was a whole let's go X amount of rounds and let's see who comes out on top. And I like that. It's just, it very much appeals to the whole hard hitting action that wrestling fans really dig.
Yeah, it does. It's a very much a wrestling fans kind of idea because it is a tournament. Should Wade Barrett have won it? Yes. You know, he can benefit the most from being called King Barrett and doing a gimmick with a crown. He's the type of character that can play that off well.
King Booker. I remember when he won. Booker's
the best.
I texted you and I said, King Booker. And because that's exactly what he did. I mean, you know, Steve Austin, when he won King of the Ring, he's like, I'm not going to do any of this gimmick stuff, you know.
But the best damn promo anyone had ever heard up until that point instead.
Yeah, one of the best. For actually, that hasn't even been a promo of the week. Can you believe that? That hasn't been our promo of the week?
It has to be the promo of the week because he says, I quote to Jake Roberts, first thing I want to be done is for you to get that piece of trash out of my ring. I've proven without a shadow of a doubt that you don't have what it takes anymore, son. What you need to do is get a bottle of that Thunderbird and get some of that confidence back you used to have. And just wow. to say Thunderbird strikes fear in my heart. It's pretty tough.
Well, I was going to cue up the applause track there for you because that was outstanding. There you go. Because that was outstanding. If you're going to, you know, that is a promo I would pay money to see for sure. So
right. That was a money promo. And that started everything. And not the next week, but over the next year and a half. That's how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So our promo of the week, there you go.
Huh?
There you go. Our promo of the week is set in stone.
Oh, yeah. That's the best. That might be the best damn promo ever. Who's to say it's the best promo ever? But if that's the best damn WWF promo from that period I can ever recall.
I think what we need to do is we need to count down our top 10 favorite promos of all time.
Oh, I don't know if I could even do that. I mean, I'd have to.
As voted upon by us and our wrestling fans on the podcast, as well as YouTube. That'll be interesting to see.
Maybe after a lengthy amount of promo of the weeks, we could do that, actually, because obviously we'll hit all the good ones by then.
I hope so. So, King of the Ring, it is great to see Barrett get on for that because he does need it. What, you know, you have to think to yourself, what characters would benefit from a win of something like that, whether it's King of the Ring or Money in the Bank or Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, whatever the case is, who's gonna benefit from that? And as we see, Barrett is gonna raise to new heights, and I do believe that it's probably gonna be high time for Barrett to feud probably with our friend Neville for what will be Daniel Bryan's title, because he's not gonna be able to defend it anymore. So
they haven't really made an announcement on the IC title, I've noticed.
They don't want to. They say, well, you know, they're going to, Daniel Bryan's probably going to, you know, his 7 different specialists to get some holistic treatments.
Well, he's been taken off of all house show sheets until late June as of this point. So that'll buy you another 6 to 8 weeks at least. And that's just them thinking, hey, he's at least out 2 months more.
They don't want to say anything because he's been out for so long.
Let's face it. He has the same damn thing that he did before. They're just not saying it. He has obviously the same thing that he had. They couldn't fix it. They went to all their great, incredible battery of doctors. He finds a holistic weirdo doctor. He fixes it. And now he's hurt again after he was with you. He wrestled from Royal Rumble to Mania. He got hurt right before Mania, I think. And he kept trying to do it because he's a hard ass working guy. I'm not dissing him, but this injury is taking forever.
Yeah, and don't mistake our commentary regarding Daniel Bryan as us hating on Daniel Bryan, because I love Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan, you know, you'll be hard pressed to find a current roster wrestler that my wife actually loves, and she loves Daniel Bryan. She doesn't love the beard. but she loves the American Dragon, Daniel Bryan. Right. And there's a reason for that, because he's awesome. So we do wish Daniel Bryan a speedy recovery. We hope that he does come back to action, but not at the expense of his own health. So, you know, he needs to be able to live a really good life. He's got a family now. And if he and Brie Bella ride off into the sunset and start off a little bed and breakfast selling nothing but, you know, hemp blankets and bean burritos, then so be it. You know, so.
I'm going to make a scary comment, okay? And I don't worry. You know who Brian reminds me of?
Who?
Chris Benoit.
Oh, boy.
He reminds his work rate, and that's what scares me about him. He won't hold back. He is the Dynamite Kid reincarnate.
He is, and he is a big influence into his wrestling style.
I believe so. And
I mean, think about it. He, you know, for over a decade, he's been doing swan dive headbutts.
Look, I'm not going to promote that gentleman I just mentioned at all, because that's just my opinion on that particular person. But it moveset wise, in a very technical way to talk about it, he does the dive. He did the diving headbutt for a long time, like the Dynamite Kid and Harley Race and Mr. Benoit. Harley Race warned Dynamite Kid, please don't do the diving headbutt. It's tough on you, and Dynamite Kid is in a wheelchair. And Dynamite Kid had the greatest matches anyone's ever seen with Bret Hart and Tiger Mask. I mean, they are unreal. I can't even believe how good they are looking back. At the same time, you know, I want to grow old and be happy. I don't want to be in a wheelchair in the ghetto, you know, and that's unfortunately what happened to him. And that is one of the saddest wrestling stories. Is what happened to Dynamite Kid, and it all comes from one thing. Calm your damn work rate down. You got to. You can't just do it forever like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're eventually going to hit
What is it that we said several shows ago about how John Cena has no dance partners? It's because during that era of ruthless aggression, all those people are dead or retired because of concussions and problems with their back. Edge, Christian, you know,
Kurt Angle had to
get off at another, you know, stop over there at the TNA.
Because they're scared to death of having him on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what's going to freaking happen. He's a liability.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so all those guys are gone. Benoit, man, you know, the saddest thing, you know. So you have to be able to think about longevity down the road. Give fans what they want. Pick and choose your spots, as Stone Cold Steve Austin says on his show. Pick and choose your spots. But it's neither here nor there. I think it's a shame. Oh, and speaking of injury, shall we go ahead and launch into this other injury since we were talking about injuries?
Very quickly, and you had a good point just now. Steve Austin, the ultimate example of completely altering your style so you don't get hurt. He was so different pre-SummerSlam 97 than post, and he made so much money they couldn't count it in 1998-99.
That's right.
With a different style.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Changing your style in order to suit your injury. How about this really quick, and I apologize if you hear any background noise. Let's look at Jeff Hardy. We did mention him very briefly. Jeff Hardy breaks his damn leg doing motocross.
Great.
Like extreme bike stunts. Now, okay. I was worried about this because I knew that he was an extreme, you know, he is a Team Extreme, but he also likes, you know, dirt bike riding and stunt bike riding. And I worried about this all throughout his run in WWE. I worried about this during his time that, you know, his house burned down and all that stuff. And he got into big trouble. And then when he first went into TNA, and it actually happened this time.
Okay, let me give you a very honest assessment, because Jeff Hardy is...
Jeff Harvey, according to...
right. Jeff Harvey. I mean Hardy.
Jeff Harvey. Yeah, Jeff Harvey, according to Mike Adamly. I know, my name is Mike Adamly, and I now am a sportscaster for Baltimore or something. I don't know where he's at now.
Cold Stone Steve Johnson.
Cold Stone Creamery.
Yeah, what are you talking about, bro? Jeff Hardy, okay, I'm going to defend him. Jeff Hardy is my age, and Jeff Hardy comes from my generation. And I don't do motocross and that stuff, but I am wild. I've been wild since I was young, and I've done a lot of silly things, usually involving fire, and I have done a barbed wire match like I once told you. And it's really hard to not be wild, you know, It really is difficult to give that up and say, gee, I'm 37. You know, I shouldn't yell at this guy for talking bad about Iron Maiden, but I did, you know, and or whatever it is I'm doing, or maybe I want to, you know, do some kind of really funny thing and impress people and take a wild bump on my back or do a flip and hurt my arm legitimately just for everyone's satisfaction. That's the sort of dumb shit I would do. And Jeff Hardy's the same way, okay? And he likes to do motocross, and he will never stop doing that because those guys just do that sort of thing. It's hard for a guy like Jeff Hardy to envision him having like grandkids and being on grandpa's lap, because he comes from our Generation X extremist level. He's an extremist in every way. He took a bump this year. I think it was this year. Might have been late last year. That was the most disturbing bump I've seen all year, when he fell from the top of the cage onto basically his head almost. On the steps in TNA. I mean, that bump was wild as anything I've seen this year. And he's a wild man, and now he's hurt. And he was, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know if you're familiar with this place, he was doing that jump in the Imagination. You know what that is? That's Jeff Hardy's
home. That's his home.
Jeff Hardy's home. And that's how you pronounce it. I even heard Shannon Moore say Imagination, and I think he's telling people to pronounce it that way. I'm not making fun of the guy.
No, you're not. No, that's how he says it.
He's a little different. So
he lives, you know, basically, let me tell you what the Imagination is all about.
Oh, please do. Please describe.
The Imagination is a double-wide trailer in the backwoods of absolutely nowhere. And where is it? The Carolinas? North Carolina?
I think they're in Cameron. I used to live around.
Okay, so it's in Cameron, North Carolina.
Right.
It is in the backwoods. He has his recording studio set up in one part of his trailer. His home set up in the other. And he has...
sculptures.
He basically has these sentinels that he's kind of welded out of metal that stand guard over his mailbox. And out back, he's built, ramps so that he can do his bike, extreme bike show stuff, maneuvers.
Right.
And, look, you're never going to see a more down-to-earth guy than the Hardys. I've met the Hardys before. I think they're really great guys. I think they really love their fans when they're not messed up. Allegedly. Thank you for that. But I wish I still kept their autograph, but I thought the Hardys were amazing. They're great people when I met them, and
most over tag team the last 25 years, by the way.
Oh, definitely, you know, and sold probably the most merch of any tag team, you know, ever, probably, arguably, especially with Lita. If it wasn't for the Hardys, let's face it, if it wasn't for the Hardys, there would be no Hot Topic, okay?
Right, yeah, they got that all going on. I mean, I remember them coming out, they were dressed in the raver gear of the day. I mean, they didn't say that on the show, but that's how people used to go to raves in 98, and I happen to maybe remember that. They would dress just like those guys did, and they were bringing a good outside influence into the bubble that is wrestling at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I wish Jeff a speedy recovery. We both do. This is what happens when you get older. Time will catch up with you, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, my knees are in bad shape. My back's in bad shape, and I'm 37. Mm-hmm. So, good luck to him.
Well, hell, I'm 40. I sure is not a spring chicken. But I will start doing DDP yoga. I've been promising myself for the past 2 years. I bought the program, and I carry it with me all the time. So I. What was that?
Well, really, what I meant was I shouldn't be in pain all the time at 30.
Oh, no, I'm in pain all the time. Well, no, I'm not in pain all the time. I travel all the time. I live out of my suitcase.
As I said in my character, the Banshee, I am 6'1 and 230 pounds, just like John Cena.
I will see if I can't splice in some of your Banshee videos. I just might just put them up on our profile page just to do a whole bunch of Banshee videos. You may have to do that too. Just so you know, Stephen Anthony, during the course of Monday Night Raw, sent me like 5 or 6 Banshee video auditions for the Tough Enough season that's coming up, and they are wildly entertaining.
Well, the Banshee is it's from Irish folklore. It's a female that howls in the night, and when you hear her howling, that means death is near. So that's what I base the Banshee character off of. I come out to the Merciful Fate song Banshee, featuring King Diamond on vocals, a very popular vocalist all around the world.
Well, who doesn't love Merciful Fate and King Diamond?
I think everyone has 2 or 3 Merciful Fate records, if I'm not.
They must after all these years. I mean, how do they keep those black metal stores in business, for heaven's sake?
Yeah, well, I mean, in a black metal store, it is the top seller.
It is. Well, King Diamond. Yeah, I mean, let's face it. No. Well, anyway, gosh, where have we been? So Monday Night Raw, just really quickly. Did we finish with King of the Ring? Yes, King of the Ring was great. I'm glad that happened on the network. I wish they would bring back King of the Ring, just make it available on the network as a network special. In fact, I propose this. I propose that they do a Queen of the Ring and film it at NXT as a special.
That's a great idea. They have the workers to do it now.
Yeah, they have the workers to do it. They can do Queen of the Ring. They can do it with the Divas. They can do it with NXT people. They can, you know, and have a really awesome female tournament. Now, that is giving Divas a chance. That is putting them on a platform that they have never been done before. Now, TNA had did a knockout show at one point. And I thought that was a brilliant move, if I'm not mistaken. I believe the knockout show, that was all knockouts, right?
I think it was TNA knockouts, right?
Yeah, it was like, yeah, I think it was a special event. And correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, there's a reason why the TNA knockout division has been what it was, or had been, which was a leader in female wrestling.
It's
a little different now, but I think they're coming back to that, trying to rebuild it. And I believe that WWE has an opportunity with the amount of talent they have on the roster, man. I would love to see, you know, Bayley and Charlotte. By the way, I'm over on Bayley. I love Bayley. Bayley's my new girl. She's so much fun, and I want to hug Bayley. I'm putting it out there. The Queen of the Ring, make it happen. NXT Divas and NXT talent with the Divas, that'd be amazing.
Brilliant idea, Al John. I love it. An eight gal.
Yes.
And Queen Sasha Banks, or Queen
Charlotte,
or Queen Naomi, whoever you pick, would be great. And really get them over even more, you know. But yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. And just to wrap up the Hardy thing, they are the tag champions, and one of them has a broken leg, and the last tag champions, the American Wolves, one of them had a broken shin. So that seems those are two great tag teams, American Wolves and the Hardy Boys. And they just have a round of bad luck over and over. And one of their only over guys was Jeff Hardy on the TNA show. So more problems for TNA.
Yeah, so that leaves a very open spot on the roster for a tag team. And, you know, the only thing I can think now is that they're once again, here comes another tourney. Another tournament's happening or something like that. Or someone's going
to
crown.
They don't have enough teams to do a tournament. Sorry. Yeah,
well... We'll see.
They just did a tournament.
I know. Well, I know they just did a tournament. I know they're going to have to do another one. Let's see. Hits and misses of this Monday night's Raw real quick.
Okay.
What do you say about it? I there was a lot of really good action on this Raw, I think.
Great Raw. Very good Raw. Great.
Solid.
Ratings of the year. 2.5. That's not a good sign. Hits.
Well, this is moving into the summer. The summer tends to be pretty soft on viewers.
Right. Hits. New Day. New Day is, you know, I hate to say I said it, but I said, hey, I think New Day is awesome. I think it. And then sure enough, they put him right in the main event, proving without a shadow of a doubt that Vince McMahon's listened to the entire 90 minutes of our podcast weekly.
He's part of the hundreds that watch a show and the thousands that download it every week.
Hundreds of thousands. That means hundreds of thousands.
That's right.
Technically. Allegedly. Let me just say that Xavier Woods is one of my new favorite characters. I can remember the exact moment that I loved him. It was during the pay-per-view match. They went to him on ringside, and he tried to get them to chant. The crowd went, New Day sucks. And he went, what did we do? Why don't you like us?
I love it.
We're winning. And I said, this guy gets it. This guy's awesome. They were all
over. I love that moment in time. You just recreated it so good.
Tell me, what did we do wrong?
I love it.
We'll change it.
Well, that's why I put New Day on the cover of our last video show, because they're awesome. I love it. I absolutely love New Day.
And they, you know, they pinned Randy Orton, who's, let me say this, another hit. First of all, Roman Reigns or Randy Orton are in the ring having their kind of, you know, they had, Randy was in good mood. Montreal's a great crowd. And New Day comes out after their discussion. Roman goes surprised, like, oh, what are they doing out here? Their rap music starts, and Randy, instead of acting surprised, starts grooving to the New Day song. And Randy, a small moment, but brilliant. Randy's more over now than he's ever been as a babyface. I cannot
love Randy Orton.
Sober.
Love Randy Orton. I'm so happy that his character got freshened up. It's something that he's been needing forever. And the whole RKO out of nowhere, dude. Just start talking about that, man. That ought to be his, you know, the hashtag trends every Monday night.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. You know, Rollins against Orton should be doing bigger. You know, maybe if they did, you know, Orton against Rusev or Orton against Triple H or Orton against the Banshee, something like that would really.
Like what you did there. you're right. I mean, those are over guys. I mean, Rusev, I think is over. They need to find him. What's up? You know, New Day is over. I'm so happy about that. We have Wade Barrett on the rise. His star is back where it should be. And we have Randy Orton. We have Seth Rollins. Look at the faces of our main event. Oh, and by the way, how about Dean freaking Ambrose?
Yeah, son.
What's up with that?
Finally, a little push from my man, John Moxley. Dean Ambrose. Yes. It's a long time coming. He has fought off their poor booking of or poor writing of him. They've actually protected him quite a bit if you really look at it. Yes. They've really protected him. Protected means not doing a bunch of jobs, you know, because wins and losses matter. And they really do matter because there's a sea of mid-carders because they win and lose, and that's what makes you a mid-carder. You're a main eventer when you mostly win. Okay, and he mostly wins. That's a guy that doesn't mostly win apparently is Seth Rollins. I'd have to look at it, but not including disqualifications, I'm pretty certain he has more losses than wins since winning the title, which I find pretty interesting. They've booked Rollins as this sort of age of enlightenment. Yeah, right. Age of entitlement sort of champion. This brat. Wah, wah, wah. I don't want to wrestle him. I don't want to wrestle him. Kane, give me what I want. Shut up, you little bastard. This probably is the direct relationship between Vince McMahon and Seth Rollins backstage in some sense.
I really like the storytelling there because it is the self-entitled generation, and I believe Seth Rollins is an avatar for the IWC.
Right, it is. It's like, so, hey, here's your fucking paper champion, Internet.
That's right.
Wait till Brock Lesnar comes back in July, and Rollins will probably still be the champion, I predict, and watch the beating that this man takes at SummerSlam. Just wait for it.
Well, you know, someone else's star who's also on the rise happens to be Ryback. And, you know, really? they're continuing. Well, they're trying to push Ryback, and they're trying to put them up against the new face of evil. What's that?
His promo was a miss for me. They obviously tried to have him cut a normal promo like a normal human and without his catchphrases, and the crowd shit on it until the catchphrases, and then he got him back. He did a pretty good job with the mic at fighting off the weird crowd, and I was impressed with that, but he's still not over yet. He's still mid-card over, and they turned him into a mid-carder a long time ago. But, you know, he's getting a lot of wins, and I think he beat Rusev at the house shows over the past week, which is very interesting. I think we might see Rusev being de-pushed, actually, because I believe Lana will get like a bigger role. She's obviously being groomed for a huge starring role. She's one of the most over people in the company out of nowhere.
Well, Pitch Perfect is coming out. So we'll see how she does and how it's being promoted, if at all. And then we'll also see whether she rises to the ranks of Raw General Manager.
Hey, she's the most evil Russian I've ever seen who went to Florida State.
That's right. And we'll see. You know, they tried this experiment with AJ Lee. Two very good results.
This girl can pull it off, man. I got a lot of confidence in her.
Well, she can act. She can act.
She's very good.
There's a big difference. You know, AJ, very good results. AJ got over because they made her a Jezebel. So
Jezebel AJ.
That's right. They made her a Jezebel, and people tuned in for it because there's nothing like a hot Jezebel, you know, buddying up to get her way all the way to the top, which, you know, baby that was doll. The story.
Like baby doll,
loaded up with the Gucci bag.
The best Jezebel of all time is baby doll.
That's right. Jezebel.
That'll be a promo of the month of the week, 1 week later.
The baby doll promo.
Dusty says, okay. This was so great. Why I love wrestling. He goes, and baby doll, I know you better than anybody, mama. I know you. And it was like, did Dusty and Baby Doll have a relationship? And he's really talking. I couldn't distinguish work from shoot. Now, apparently it was a work. That's how good Dusty is. That's how great Baby Doll was as a character. Here I am reliving the old days as usual.
I know. That's what people love the show. So, you know, definitely a step in the right direction. The audience didn't respond. It is the summertime. You know, we'll see what happens. You know, the WWE just put out a recent survey to its network subscribers. Did you fill it out?
No, I don't do anything like that.
Okay, well, I did, and I wrote, literally, I wrote three paragraphs of
how to get approved. That sounds like something you would do.
I did, because I care. I did, I care. I mean, I told them about programming. I told them about how they can bring back roundtables and commentaries. I mean, I wrote them at least that in two different surveys I did. Because once again, you know, if they understand that hardcore wrestling fans are sticking around because they like the content, they need to feed that. And what better way to feed that is by having people like Paul Heyman provide commentary, people like Jim Ross provide commentary, and of course the wrestling superstars involved in the most iconic angles of all time. And I really dig what they did with the WrestleMania moments, the packages that they do for the network specials, because you go back, and in fact, they repackaged a Big Show Mayweather package. Yeah. For this past Saturday for that fight. And I thought it was well done. And I watched those documentaries. It's like watching Behind the Music. Since both Steven and I are both musicians, we watch VH1's Behind the Music. And I know I have. I've seen every episode of Behind the Music and remastered Behind the Music. And I really appreciate the storytelling of the certain iconic portions of superstars' lives. So seeing that on the network is an added plus. So
yeah, and the roundtable is something they need to bring back to it. That was really a lot of fun, and they talk about good old times, and they have all the roundtables on the network, all the old ones, and that used to be my favorite moments of subscribing to the on-demand WWE network, which is the old version, and a very 24/7.
Yeah,
which was more expensive than the network and had, or just the same amount and had less content, much less.
Yeah,
but so. Love those roundtables. Here's another miss for me from Raw, sir.
Okay,
now look. I talk a lot about racism with wrestling.
Mm.
R-Truth afraid of plastic spiders. Do you feel, maybe I'm reading too much into this, to me this is sort of like that dumb old racist redneck idea that, you know, African Americans are afraid of things like ghosts and that this seems like that really old type of racist mentality. What, you know, he's afraid of spiders and I'm afraid of spiders. This is such a turnoff for me. It's such a turnoff for the live crowd. They completely hated it. Mm-hmm. That I would really just be really excited if they would just stop doing this with him.
Well, it's a different situation. Well, first of all, you know, I mean, that whole situation came from the whole Little Jimmy angle back in the day. They're revisiting something. It's very rare that they revisit something that is like a year or two old, you know, or 3 years in this case, you know. But it is interesting to see that. I think it's just a really lazy attempt for them to do something. I tell you what they need to do. If they're going to try to play up on the whole scary movie aspect of the Wayans brothers type of humor with R-Truth, they actually just need to put them on, you know, do a little ghost hunting, you know, hey, look, you know, man, I'm not going to go down that hallway, that corridor. My dressing room's all the way down there, man. It's haunted. Something's haunted over there. Haunted.
I wouldn't go there.
But it's better than plastic spiders.
I'm just saying I have a lot of friends that are very turned off by that angle.
I can see why. Yeah.
You know, and that's because it brings up, I just think they need to drop that it's very silly to me. Plastic spiders pin. And it, you know, why is he afraid of spiders? You know, I don't understand. He's just afraid of them because he's dumb. Seems to be the idea, and I just I don't like it. That's just my personal opinion on that.
Oh no, I understand. You know, there's a lot of things that go unsaid in this particular segment, so we'll just leave it at that, shall we?
We'll just leave it at that. But I was not impressed at all with that moment, and I would be pleased if they would go a different direction with Ron Killings, an excellent worker, an excellent dancer, actually a real life awesome dancer. You know, if he were Fandango, you would see some like he really can dance. It's awesome.
And was it in Jim Ross's show, or no, it was Chris Jericho's show, where he actually talked to R-Truth about him being a choreographer for MC Hammer or something like that, or being an MC Hammer entourage dancer?
Well, yeah, I mean, the minute he came out, and I think that's true. I think I remember that. But I mean, the minute he came out on TNA, it was obviously like, well, this guy can really pop, do the pop movements, and he's incredible.
And by the way, one of the very few wrestling theme songs that was played in both TNA and WWE.
That's probably the only one, right?
Yeah, I think so.
How did they pull that off? Well, I guess he pulled it off by being a TNA first.
Well, he pulled it off because Ron Killings owns the trademark and the protection licensing for that song.
Wow. Now that I didn't actually know.
Well, he wrote it. So as far as I know, he wrote the music and he did the rap for it and everything like that. And even though it's marketed these days by WWE, it's one of the very few things. If you go back to the old TNA home video, they play it. They play What's Up in its original state. And it's because R-Truth wrote it. So R-Truth can take that theme song.
He's a pretty decent rapper as far as wrestlers go. I've heard a lot of bad rappers who are wrestlers. Like, I'm thinking of Mo from Men in a Mission. But
apparently, I think he's working on a new album, and I think he actually has John Cena guesting on the record or something like that. I don't know. Maybe I'm just starting a rumor here on the show.
Yeah, let's start rumors about the oncoming R-Truth record with John Cena guesting.
I think what they need to do is they need to have a Fozzy R-Truth remix and have Fozzy do a song and have R-Truth come out and do a breakdown rap right in the center section.
Why do I remember something like that happening? Oh, that's right. It was Chris Jericho against, was it Chris Jericho against Cena, and Cena was, it was rap versus rock? Am I wrong
about
that?
Yes, it was rap versus rock. Yes, that was 2008 before he got dumped in the, that was the Eric Bischoff era of Raw.
That's when everyone was getting dumped into the dumpster.
Everyone was getting dumped in the dumpster, yeah.
One of my favorite weird era from Raw was when Bischoff was dumped in the dumpster by McMahon, something I'm sure Vince had been wanting to do for literally for years. And that's what's cool about the show. Sometimes people can actually live out their fantasies and put them on screen like that. And he's like, I'm throwing you in the dumpster because you're trash.
Yeah, yeah.
Great Raw moment.
Right.
You know who else was awesome on Raw? I'm sorry. Very important. It was Sami Zayn.
Oh, well, talk about the injury report. It continues to build here on the show.
Yeah, and I've been a fan of him for many, many years as El Generico, which I thought was a really funny gimmick, and he's always been a great worker. You know, they bring him out in Montreal.
His hometown.
Thunderous pop. Great setup. Bret Hart was hilarious with his punching three-man band with the microphone. His
timing. What's up with that? They couldn't, you know what? Somebody said something about, Heath Slater coming out to three-man band. Well, remember, Jim Johnson actually wrote it as one-man band.
Right.
And why don't they bring back the one-man band theme? Because he only is one man these days.
Yeah, the three-man band is disbanded.
Yeah, they've gone to other promotions.
Yes, they have, to great success thus far.
So far.
But Zayn came, this was a very, people like to rate matches, like we say. I like matches that are interesting, and that a lot of interesting different things happen. And this match was very, very interesting to me. They had the great setup with Hart. It was a perfect setup. He comes out, apparently he hurt his shoulder that he had injured previously, coming down the ramp. And popped it out of socket. Oh, poor guy. This is his greatest moment, and his shoulder pops out of socket. I can't imagine what he thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so watching at home, I'm thinking, well, he'll... the trainer was right out, and I knew something was wrong because they started, and Cena was looking at him like, what? And I could see them talking. He gave him a kind of this weird little safe-ish power bomb that Cena does and puts him in a headlock, and they're talking. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Well, why didn't they lock up? Well, why would you start a match like this? And I'm like, why didn't they review how to do the match in the back? And they're talking, and then the trainer comes out, and his arm did look out of socket just barely. You could kind of tell if you watch back. And then the trainer, I think, popped it back in. And they proceeded to have a very strange match. A very strange match. He did. Cena looked annoyed. Like, I swear at one point I thought I saw him go, what do you want to do? Tell me what to do and I'll do it. Like, what are we doing? You know, and Cena looked annoyed and Zayn looked concerned and the referee looked perplexed. He was given the X sign. And it was really, the crowd heat was great. They actually had a pretty decent match. It wasn't anything like a Sami Zayn match is. it was actually ended up being a great debut. It doesn't really matter because he was on the booking sheets for SmackDown, but not for anything in the short term. So he has time to get better, unlike like Daniel Bryan, who was booked on house shows. But I don't know about the NXT main event he had scheduled for, I believe, is it tomorrow? I don't even know. No. I think it's in a month or something like that against who's your boy Owens. Yeah. So we'll have to see, but that was an extraordinary moment on Raw that I really enjoyed. And Montreal is a great crowd, and they always have been a great crowd and a great wrestling town.
Which,
and,
by the way, afterwards they had Pat Patterson appreciation night after the show went off the air, which was great because we all love Pat Patterson, the best mind in the business and one of the most genuine people you'll probably ever meet. And really cool that he ended up singing his favorite karaoke song, My Way, for the entire crowd, which was awesome.
And Pat really did do it his way. You know, he openly gay guy in the locker room for years. It didn't matter. He had respect. I mean, this would be in the 80s, you know. And kudos to wrestling, actually, for, you know, unlike football, apparently, and to some degree, baseball and basketball, you know, they've had openly gay wrestlers for several years, and it was never an issue, you know. Oh. Patterson was the top of the – it never mattered. Patterson was the top of the heap. Probably the greatest, perhaps the greatest booker of all time, if you really think about what he has booked with Vince McMahon. But their booking duo is certainly the most successful in terms of money made booking team of all time when they did it just themselves. And this would have been from the early onset of Hogan all the way to maybe you know, the later 90s. So that 15-year or so run where it was just the two of them was excellent.
And the inventor of such matches as the Royal Rumble concept.
Yep. Royal Rumble concept, a very tricky match to put together. If you think about it, we saw them completely fail at it, unfortunately, this year because of the crowd. You know, that would have been the reverse version of the Montreal crowd. It was a Philly crowd really turning on it.
Perhaps they need to have Pat Patterson come in just especially for that event every single year just to help write it.
They probably should. From what I understand, he still writes from home. He has a pretty cushy position. He's still very much involved with the business, although not to the degree he was where he'd be involved in every single match finish in the main events, you know, like he was before. You know, guys like Arn Anderson, Dean Malenko, and the J-Brone security squad of Seth Rollins has taken over those positions. Patterson, I kind of wish it was on the main show in some way, shape, or form. When they tried to do this before, it was the night that Lawler had gotten the heart attack, and they actually didn't do it that night. So I'm glad they went ahead and did that. And just to wrap it up, Neville jobbed again to Barrett a second straight time to the Bullhammer. So Neville doesn't look to be getting any kind of significant push like we're hoping. And hopefully, and Zane job too, just to wrap that up. And NXT guys having a lot of trouble on the main roster getting wins so far, it would appear.
I'm curious to see, because it's usually around this time that a bunch of wrestlers are let go.
I don't know if they'll do that this time. If anything, they seem to be, they let go some NXT wrestlers who were kind of low on the ladder, and we didn't really see a lot of them on TV. But I don't know, and going back to the very first thing I said, I don't know if they can afford to get rid of anybody at this point, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, who do they have that's not in the show would be the real question. That's who gets let go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of someone, but, you know, if anything, they're adding talent, which is a good thing. You know, and it's nice
roster, having a deeper roster with a plan of attack in case things like this and injuries win, and you know they will happen. It's inevitable. They need to have a very good backup plan, just like all stage artists that are out there. There's always an understudy, so they need to go ahead and make sure that those things are taken care of. You know, and I think probably this is the first time in any wrestling podcast or any wrestling show that anyone has referred to a wrestler having an understudy. So you can, you know, once again, it's the whole different entertainment aspect that I bring to the table in regards to making sure that these live performances, these live tapings, and this is something that, you know, Dixie Carter and you know, Big and all those people that are making decisions over there at TNA need to make sure that they have in place
as an
understudy, because Lord knows, you know, your tag team division has needed several understudies
now. Well, to me, the wrestling show now is run much more like a play on Broadway than it is like a wrestling show was traditionally. And that's sort of a testament. You might remember the South Park, if you watch South Park, did an episode on WWE. And, you know, Vince McMahon was a theater owner who ran the plays. And that's sort of what he is, you know. And that's why, by the way, Kane and Big Show will get pushed a million times over Bryan and Neville and Sami Zayn. Why? Because they're big? Yes, of course. But because they don't get hurt. They just don't get hurt. And those other guys do. And it's
John Cena. Look at John Cena.
John Cena, safe as can be in the ring. He is very stiff. He's a cement mixer, as Ric Flair said on the High Spots shoot, to give them a plug. He's a real cement mixer in there, but he doesn't do anything to where a guy's going to land directly in the top of his head or on his shoulder or anything like that. You know, that, you know, Bryan and Zayn have arm shoulder issues from bumps, you know, and you don't want to see somebody pass away in the ring like Misawa, where the crowd's chanting Misawa, Misawa. It's like Misawa's taking too many damn bumps, you know, and that's that was one of the saddest things I've ever witnessed, you know.
You know what? You know what? Who's also a pretty safe worker? Look at R-Truth. I don't recall a moment in time where R-Truth had any extended injury, was out for any time.
And that's why he stayed on the show despite a push, and he's obviously getting de-pushed again. But that's a classic example of a mid-card guy, in and out, in and out, in and out, R-Truth, you know. Well, I know a guy we haven't seen, Jack Swagger. But again, they would keep Jack Swagger, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would. I mean, he's a good backup plan. I mean, and look at, and the other guy that wasn't hardly ever injured. In fact, I'd never known him to be out of for a wrestling injury, but maybe for a very small amount of time. Chris Jericho.
Yes, yes. The only time I ever heard about a significant injury with him was in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, when he was very young and silly.
Yep.
But I'll let Jim Cornette tell that story on his podcast.
That's right, the Cornette Experience. So anyway, I mean, what a great week of wrestling this has been. You finally were able to catch up with Lucha Underground. And is that not just a great show?
This is the number two promotion to me right now.
Yeah, Lucha, but it's the number two promotion that's on the bubble of actually not coming back for the next season.
They need, well, it looks expensive to make. Okay, first of all,
it is very expensive to make. But it's highly effective in the way they introduce wrestling villains and heels and tag teams, and
awesome.
The backstage vignettes are very cinematic, which I love. It's like once again, it looks like an episode of Grand Theft Auto on TV. It's just very, very good.
Very dark imagery on the show, but they don't really do a lot of dark. Their angles make sense. Prince Puma, King Cuerno have probably the best entrance masks I've seen in some time. I mean, the guy has a complete deer head on his head. It's extraordinary that he could.
That's
even
pretty huge.
I mean, it's really awesome. Conan, I'm a huge fan of, as I've said before on this show. He's a great actor. The backstage vignettes are awesome. They have Johnny Mundo and they have Johnny Mundo, and they also have El Patron on the show. And I think they really are, like they said on the show, they really are two of the best wrestlers in the world right now. They have I saw the Drago episode was really good. Apparently he turned back into a dragon after his loss. You know, they do like cinematic sort of things like that. I couldn't be any more pleased with watching the program. I've watched for about a month now. I've DVR'd it. I didn't realize I had the L-Ray network. I guess that's why they're kind of hard to find, and maybe why they're on the bubble. They deserve to be in a bigger channel, by the way, like maybe Spike or whatever.
Well, you know, it does appeal, obviously, to the El Rey network. I mean, you have Rodriguez, who's doing a great job doing programming and doing stuff on his network. That is his network.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this really good stuff. And by the way, the season finale of the show is going to be airing in August, called Ultima Lucha, which should be an amazing show. Definitely a must catch show. It's easy to digest. It's easy to follow along. They do have rules, and I do agree. John Morrison, Johnny Mundo, and El Patron. Just great talents in the ring, but everybody else as well, you know.
Fantastic.
Ivelisse. All right. Yeah. I'm all about some Ivelisse. So
awesome show, man.
So definitely our kudos to that. You know, Ring of Honor is continuing to do really good stuff as well. I mean, you know, I think we've seen the Samoa Joe come and go. you know,
well, they have the tremendous New Japan cards coming up in Canada and in Philly. You know, we probably should spend more time on that next time when it gets closer to it. But I'll just tell you, I've seen the cards that they have already put together, and it's nonstop awesome.
Yeah, and it's good stuff. To be honest, yes, they could have. I feel that Ring of Honor could use a production facelift. You know,
yes,
they really could use a production facelift. I think the video packages are old. I think some of the I'm kind of tired of what their managers are doing. It's just not working for me. I'm not into it.
No,
I'm not into the hokey gimmicks. They just need to be the alternative. You know, kind of bring some of that UFC kind of Ultimate Fighting style presentation to Ring of Honor, because that is what they do the best.
Yeah.
So that's my whole take on Ring of Honor. A lot of those vignettes and backstage things are hard to watch, man. I'd much rather see what's going on in the ring, unless they can change their production values and the way they present the talent. I tell you what needs to do. If they need to have some really cool stuff in the ring, just, you know, put them backstage in some kind of, made up press conference, and have the two of the people go at it, you know, like a big fight, and do it just like that. And, but that's my thought on Ring of Honor.
Couple of matches really quickly that I just noticed that are going to be Okada against Michael Elgin will blow everyone away. I guarantee that. Jushin Liger will be on the show.
Will he job this time?
Huh?
Will he job this time?
Yes, he'll job.
Will he job again?
He's old enough to job now. Bullet Club will face the Briscoe Brothers. The Bullet Club is a very over American tag team. You may remember Doc Gallows from his time in America. Kushida against Jay Lethal. It's going to be awesome. And my boy Tanahashi's going to be there. AJ Styles will be there. Just a whole lot of awesomeness is going to happen from those cards. And those shows will be, I don't know how they'll put those packages together, but they will be excellent. Probably the best shows of the year. I mean, I guarantee those will be the best shows or cards of the year that they have, because New Japan's out of sight.
Yes, you know. Indeed. It's going to be interesting to see how they work together with another Global Force wrestling promotion. Jeff Jarrett is working on a new special that's coming up. And if they continue to do these things on a quarterly basis, I think they're going to be doing really well, especially if they bring back, the commentary team of Matt Stryker and good old Jim Ross. So.
Yeah, we'll see if they can pull that off. I thought Global was going to announce their... I thought they were going to announce their lineup, basically their roster, but I haven't heard anything yet. So.
I haven't either. I just hear rumblings.
It's always rumblings with that organization, but Jeff's a good guy. I've actually dealt with him. I've sold suits to him, and he's a class act. Karen Angle's a class act, and they're good people. Don't let his character or the internet stuff you hear get you wrong. He is a very classy guy. A good old boy from Hendersonville, and a good man, you know. Honestly,
well,
I know
that. Well, if you see, did you see his role in Spring Breakers?
No,
you should. he plays kind of like a Christian counselor, which is just right up his alley. It happens during the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Which
that would be the only.
At least you should see on Netflix. You know, I mean, you can't get the rest of the 2 hours back, but you can't say at least Jeff Jarrett act, which is cool. So at any rate,
not to out Jeff Jarrett, but he was a former member of the John Rich crew, the notorious John Rich crew in downtown Nashville back in my drinking days. And these boys were the real thing. That's what probably they based that main event posse off of.
Main event mafia,
because
the main event mafia was basically the Music City Mafia, and
the Music City Mafia was more over than the main event.
This is true.
If you'd seen them in action, like old Steve Berger on Broadway, you'd be like, "Hey, these are some main eventers." But love those guys. All of the guys.
I used to love being a main eventer, man. What happened to me when I was a main eventer on the radio? I'd go into clubs. I'd never have to pay cover. Man, it happened.
Well, I didn't have a very long main event run in Nashville. But when you're feeling it, and there's a great vibe to the streets out there. But there's a time. You got to just walk away and not drink 30 shots of Jägermeister. And
oh, dear Lord. Been there, done that. My main event mafia days are over as well.
The darkness.
I'm main eventing on the internet these days. No longer doing main event pay-per-views. That was a rough time.
kids, stay away from Tootsies, and definitely stay away from Printers Out.
Definitely. That is just some words of advice. As we button this show up, I think we have our promo of the week, which is going to be Austin 316. That hasn't been featured as our promo of the week, and it should be. And we're going to bring you that promo in its entirely in audio form for your ear holes. I think you'll enjoy that. Match of the week, a different story. That could also very well be King of the Ring if you wanted to do that as well. I mean, that's, you know, or we did mention a few other possibilities for a match of the week.
Did we? Did we do the Stan Hansen one where he pops the guy's eye out?
We already did that, yes.
Oh, shucks.
We did Stan Hansen and versus Vader, which was just...
I know we're running real long on time, but I heard a Stan Hansen on the Ross Report, and they were talking about the match. You know, I never heard it when you brought it up. I did hear it, and he says, I quote, "Vader hurt his eye." Hurt his eye? That's kind of not as significant as what actually happened. I know he's a nice Christian man from Texas, but my goodness, sir. Ow, I just hurt my eye. I poked it. See, that's hurting your eye.
Yeah.
Or it's a different when your eye comes it's loose angry. From your face.
Yeah, exactly.
Match of the week, I don't know. Whatever you think.
Let's see here. Well, we did talk about... maybe we should, I tell you what, let's go ahead and do 316 as well from King of the Ring.
I would say do Mark Miro against Steve Austin. That's
you want to do Mark Miro? Okay, that's Miro versus Austin.
Superior match and a hidden treasure in the Mark. That's definitely the best Mark Miro match you're going to ever see, folks.
That is the best Mark Miro match ever. By the way, I'm still marking out for Steve Blackman. We didn't talk about that, but
I cannot think of a match of the week involving him.
Neither can I.
Maybe the Shane match was good.
Okay, you know what?
Shane jumped off a scaffold because he's nuts.
Okay, so there it is. We're going to go ahead and do. I'm going to make an executive decision. We're going to do Shane McMahon versus Kurt Angle, King of the Ring.
Ah, yes.
And the plate glass window match. That'll be our match of the week for this time. We have our promo of the week from Stone Cold Steve Austin, so that helped out tremendously.
Okay, King of the Ring, heavy stuff. I love it. Great match. Lots of concussions, suplexes, and of course, glass.
And Shane McMahon, too, in this episode. Conspicuously not in this episode is...
Nick Bockwinkel. The Legacy of the AWA, I picked up the DVD at McKay's. There's a plug for McKay's right there off the interstate. I just wanted to say Nick Bockwinkel against Vern Gagne from 81's on there. And if you ever have a chance, Nick Bockwinkel is honestly one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Every match, distinct and different. Great promos, great look, great champion. Held the title for almost 6 years.
And there you go, my friend. We're going to wrap this show up. Another wrestling show in the can. Pro Wrestling Cast. Follow us at P Wrestling Cast on Twitter and Pro Wrestling Cast on Facebook. Like and subscribe to our videos as well as our podcast. You can find on iTunes as well as Stitcher, courtesy of the We Be Geeks Podcast Network. In the meantime, I'm Al John, and for Stephen Anthony, our heel commentator, don't forget to tuck your head, and we'll see you guys next week.
Promo of the week.
The fourth prestigious King of the Ring, Stone Cold Steve Austin, an incredible victory.
The first thing I want to be done is to get that piece of crap out of my ring.
Come on.
Don't just get him out of the ring, get him out of the WWE. Because I've proved, son, without a shadow of a doubt, you ain't got what it takes anymore. You sit there and you thump your Bible and you say your prayers and it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, "I just whipped your ass."
He is stone cold.
Come on, that's not necessary.
All he's got to do is go buy him a cheap bottle of Thunderbird.
All right, stop
and
it.
Try to dig back some of that courage he had in his prime. As the King of the Ring, I'm serving notice to every one of the WWE superstars. I don't give a damn what they are. They're all on the list, and that's Stone Cold's list, and I'm fixing to start running through all of them.
All right, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And his remarks?
Yes, sir. As far as this championship match is considered, son, I don't give a damn if it's Davey Boy Smith or Shawn Michaels. Steve Austin's time has come. And when I get the shot, you're looking at the next WWE champion. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Obviously anything but humble. the fourth prestigious King of the Ring, Stone Cold.
Thanks for checking out Pro Wrestling Cast. If you've got a question or comment, leave us a voicemail at 615-9339-PWC. That's 615-9339-792. Follow us on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Cast and on Twitter at P Wrestling Cast, or email us at ProWrestlingCast@gmail.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
The opinions and ideas presented in these podcasts are those of Pro Wrestling Cast and are for entertainment purposes.
You're awesome. Thank you so much, Mr. Funk, for saying what needed to be said.
This program is made possible by MagicalJourneysVacations.com. Kristen has got a deal for you. Free dining is back. For more details or to get a free quote, visit MagicalJourneysVacations.com. Book your Disney, Universal, or cruise today. MagicalJourneysVacations.com.
I am a Jedi. Like my father before me.
Are you a fan of Disney, Star Wars, and Marvel? Well, look no further than JediMouseketeer.com. On this geeky fan site, you'll find the latest news, videos, information on movies, comics, and more. Check out JediMouseketeer.com and follow him on Twitter at JediMouseketeer.
Remember, the Force will be with you always.